If you want this podcast free of ads, follow us now on patreon.com/David McWilliams.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Economic indicators.
Who knows where this is going to end up?
To understand the economy, you have to understand human nature.
This podcast is powered by Acast.
How you doing there? It's the Thursday podcast. Hope all is well. How are you, Ed?
I'm good. How was your week?
My week has been all right. I'm getting bored now. I'm going on Hollyoaks.
Bored?
I'm going to Hollyoaks in a couple of weeks' time. I'm going to Hollyoaks.
Sorry, I thought it was me that was
boring.
No,
it's never you. It's always me, John, the breakup. It's never you. It's me.
It's you.
I've changed.
You've changed.
Nothing to do with you. I've changed. No, I'm good. I'm actually going on meet Jolliers next week to Croatia.
Yeah.
We will continue to podcast.
Yes, yeah, so absolutely we will.
And we will try and dull the sound.
You'll be up in the attic with the church bell tolling away.
The church bell, the crickets, by the way. When I go on my holidays to Croatia, which I go every year, John goes mad because it's in a small little village and we live beside the church and they love our half hour ding dong, ding dong, ding dong. And then there's crickets and then there's Croats roaring and shouting at each other out the window. So it'll give you a sort of an ambient, it's like a Brian Eno record.
Yes.
Ambient music.
Yeah.
And it'll give you the ambient Croatian
Here
thing.
Here comes the warm jets.
There comes the warm jets. That was one of his. Yeah.
Brilliant.
So I'm good. Actually, this month is the 60th anniversary of an amazing book called The Death and Life of Great American Cities by Jane Jacobs. And I am rereading it.
All right.
As we speak.
Tell us. Give us a tracy of it.
Well, you know,
I'm not going to read it.
I know, I do all the reading. The other week we were talking about Dunleary and towns and cities. Well, Jane Jacobs was this extraordinary urbanist. She was originally from New York, but left the United States to live in Canada during the Vietnam War as protest.
Okay.
A bit like, do you know Naomi Klein?
Yes.
A Canadian.
Ooh, yes.
Yeah, Canadian, very left-wing writer. Her parents the same. So there's a lot of American sort of anti-establishment folk who went to Canada.
Yeah.
Anyway, Jane Jacobs, it's all about how cities should live. And her whole idea is the city is a complex living organism and that density is the key. So do you remember the great French, I think he was Swiss French, but maybe French architect Le Corbusier? Le Corbusier's idea that humans should all live in these huge, big, remote towers with no real sense of urban life. And
right.
Jane Jacobs was the opposite of that, right? Mm. She was saying that urban life is essential. Anyway, the point is, John, it's a fantastic read. And she says things like, for example, that, you know, the police force is not what keeps you actually safe. It's other humans. So she talked about the great ballet of the street, the waltz and ballet of the street of people coming out at various different times. It should be high density. It doesn't have to be high in terms of height. Anyway, it's a great book and I'm rereading it. Maybe actually we do a podcast on it.
Her name has cropped up on numerous podcasts, but actually maybe it would be nice to focus in on her thesis itself.
Actually, what we'll do is we'll get a Jane Jacobs expert, which is not you and me, and we'll talk to them. But apart from that, I'm worried about banks.
Yes, aren't we all?
We are. Well, exactly. we are going to investigate. We are going to do, as the Americans say, a deep dive.
And unpack it, maybe?
And unpack. Our state is about to sell Bank of Ireland for half the price it's worth. And on this podcast, I want to figure out, why is that? What's the real story behind it?
Do you know where we'll go then?
Where we go?
The West Lower.
Oh. Where's Tarquin?
I'm now going to talk to Rory Gillen, who has been analysing the Irish financial scene for quite a number of years now and always got an interesting take. And he published an interesting piece in his newsletter recently asking the question, the state, you'll probably be aware, is selling Bank of Ireland. And Rory's saying, it's selling Bank of Ireland, but it's selling it very cheaply. In fact, it's selling it almost at half price at the moment. Why is that? Why now? All those sort of questions. Interestingly, is there a link, and I'm going to take this in a minute, between the timing of selling Bank of Ireland and Bank of Ireland taking over Davies? But that's another issue. Rory Gillen, how are you?
Good. Thank you, David. Thank you for having me on.
Not at all. Now, tell me, what do you think is going on with Bank of Ireland? Explain to me, you've written a piece said Bank of Ireland, too cheap for state sale now.
Yeah, well, anyone who is in the investment circles, Dave, and providing investment advice, you know, has to really understand how to place an intrinsic value on any company. Intrinsic value is a very important concept, and it's one that business people will know readily. And in the stock market, what it means is that often share prices are very volatile, and often they don't reflect the intrinsic value that you'd pay if you were a private owner. So private equity, for example, private equity buyers or investors would understand how to place an intrinsic value, and they'd pay no attention to the gyrations in the stock market in terms of valuing a company. It would be the same as Bank of Ireland here. It's intrinsic value. If you take it at an aggregate level, like the actual assets on its balance sheet would just be shy of 9 billion. If you put that on a per share basis, so each individual share would have an intrinsic value or a balance sheet value, that would be about €8 per share. And, you know, you can say...
And where is it now? So you say the intrinsic value...
So the share price is... Yeah, so the share price itself, which is not the balance sheet, right? Share price itself is 4.40. That's €4.40. So that's a sizable discount, about a 45% discount to the actual sort of balance sheet value. And I would argue in this case that the balance sheet value is pretty close to intrinsic value. You know, how might you judge that?
Yeah, well, explain that to me. Explain that to me. I mean, is it because you add up all the assets of the company and you divide them by the number of shares, and that gives you the actual intrinsic share value? And then if there's a difference between the trading share value and the intrinsic value, then you shouldn't be selling, or you should be buying, given how cheap or expensive it is.
Yes, it's something people in private business would do all the time. And yes, I mean, you can do it at the aggregate level, the balance sheet value, or you can do it on the per share level, David. So let's keep to the aggregate value. So if Bank of Ireland has a balance sheet value, you know, which is totting up all its assets, taking off what it's funding, its debt, and you take all other liabilities off, and you'd say, well, what is left for shareholders? And you're getting a figure of just shy of 9 billion at the end of December 2020, when the annual report came out, or when the annual report is dated. And you say, if you look at the market value, or the value of Bank of Ireland in the marketplace, then you're saying it's just shy of 5 billion. So there's a pretty big disparity there. Now, often with companies, you can say, well, if they're not doing so well, if they've got a lot of competition, tough marketplace, lacking profitability, you could say, well, perhaps the balance sheet value doesn't actually mean intrinsic value. You know, what would somebody pay for this business if they were going to buy the whole thing, right? And perhaps balance sheet value is just recording a historical cost of assets, put it that way. But in the case of banks, they're actually slightly different than most companies, because the assets on the balance sheet, a little bit like Ryanair, at the end of the day, aircraft can be sold off in a world market. Aircraft are very liquid. So bank loans, which banks own, you know, they've lent money out, that's their main assets. They're very liquid. They can be packaged into parcels and sold off if they want. And even distressed assets, as you know, on bank balance sheets can be sold off easily. and the, indeed the Irish banks, whether it's AIB, whether it's Permanent TSB and Bank of Ireland, as you know, to clean up their balance sheets, they have been selling off distressed assets for the last several years, which has made their balance sheets far more dependable, robust, transparent, whatever word you like to use. So, but you know, there are other assets on the balance sheet that you would pay no attention to, like, for example, the value of goodwill for any acquisition. They may have paid a price that is too high or whatever, or they paid an element of goodwill for it, which is over and above the value of the property assets or whatever. Any deferred tax, which really is just a computation to recognize the fact that the banks won't be paying tax for a while. So accountants have drummed up an asset that they can, they say, this is worth so much, it really would be worth nothing in a liquidation. And perhaps property. They do have good property portfolios. But I myself, if I was looking at the liquidation, I would write off the property on the case that you'd have to pay that out of redundancy staff. As politically unacceptable as that is, we're just doing a theoretical calculation here. And so you take those off and you might say, well, that 8.5 billion of balance sheet value, net balance sheet value, right, are the net value of their loans when you take off customer deposits, et cetera, et cetera. I would wind that down to about 5.8 or 5.9 billion as money that you can actually, you know, realize in cash if you went to sell the loan.
Yeah, if you sold it in the morning. So what you're saying is that no matter how you value it, either a more conservative or less conservative way, right? This Bank of Ireland right now would net the state, the taxpayer, and we're talking 600, maybe 700 million euros. It's quite a lot of money.
Yeah.
Would net the state considerably less than it would if they were to wait or if they were to maybe not sell the asset at all. And the question is, why the urgency to sell Bank of Ireland now when you know that the company is being undervalued? So if you are a seller, it means you're taking a slap in the face. If you're a buyer, it means you're taking a great little deal off the table. But in this case, the Irish state, i.e. the taxpayer, are the seller, and the buyer is another. That's the question.
Yeah, I think that's the question the government has to answer. And
which is why they listen to the David McWilliams podcast. And they do. And they do. So it's a shout out. It's a shout out, lads. Answer. Right, let's explore that, because that's really the nub of the issue. So there's a black art when it comes to, as you know, valuing a company at a certain moment. And there's all sorts of assumptions you can make about why the share price is where it is, etc. But the actual crystallization of an asset when you go to sell it is you can't sell it twice. You can only sell it once, right? Mm. You can only sell it at this price. I'm asking you, why do you think, I mean, you're in the market in Dublin, you're chatting to people, there's a lot of rumor, I presume, innuendo. Why do you think now?
Yeah, well, I mean, I have heard the rumor, you know, or the suggestions myself that perhaps it's because they're about to buy Davy Stockbrokers that they could be using this as that Bank of Ireland, or that in some way the government is selling down its stake at that time. I don't see that as an angle myself, David, for the very reason that it's Bank of Ireland is actually buying Davy Stockbrokers. So I'm kind of...
But wouldn't the government, on the basis of Davies is such a smelly asset at the moment, wouldn't really like to be actually owning a stockbroker that is under investigation by itself, right? If you actually think of the logic, right? Even your average dude advising the government say, hold your ire there a second. This is an institution that we know has, at the very, very top, Davies Stockbrokers has, at the very, very least, misled its clients. At the very, very least, right? So the state doesn't want to be owning, because that would be seen to reward the very people you're actually investigating. I mean, that would make sense to me.
Yeah, but I think Dave, you're reaching there. Yeah, I think you're trying to fit.
I always reach, my friend. That's how you get to the solutions. That's when if you don't reach, you don't get. No, but I'm trying to understand, because you and I would say that there's no urgency. Interest rates are at zero. The state can borrow all day at very, very low rates. It doesn't need to net in any great tax take at the moment.
That would be my own argument, Dave, that why now? Because the government is borrowing off the ECB essentially zero cost, right? Unlimited money. And, you know, why do it now when perhaps in 2 or 3 years' time, when, you know, European economies and Irish economy have picked up, the bank will be paying a dividend and probably a dividend off the current share price in the order of 5 or 6%. and you can borrow at zero. So, yeah. You know, why not hang on?
Why not hang on?
And look for a better time. I'm curious on it, Dave. I don't have a satisfactory answer. And I would love to know what the advisors to the government are saying and who they are. It could be Citibank, who are actually involved in the sale process. I'm curious. I don't have the answers there.
Well, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll leave this story now. I think it's an interesting question to leave hanging, and maybe some of our listeners will have an opinion as to what they believe or even have the knowledge as to what's going on. When we talk about banks, we always therefore talk, Rory, about the future of money, the presence of money, etc. I was reading today that the ECB and the Fed in the FT, it was actually during the week, have said that, you know, digital currencies are about to come, right? This is going to happen. And the idea being that the central bank will just basically, you will have a cashless economy. You will have deposits put onto your phone or into an account, and it'll be digital. What do you think is going to happen to the future of money?
That's very interesting, Dave, and the way you phrase it, because I'm in the investment markets myself, and because I have a newsletter, I have a keen interest in finding out quickly about the innovations that are coming down the line. I have been intrigued with cryptocurrencies, and we might get onto those in a moment, because I've been, I write a lot about gold in my investment newsletter. But to go back to digital currencies, I think there's two big points that I would make, Dave, and I would agree with you. And it makes complete sense to me that we will have eventually a cashless society. I think it is a game changer for governments in terms of tax revenue,
yep.
Because it will eliminate the shadow economy or the black economy. And it will mean, more transparent, more robust tax revenues for government. You know, people might say it's a negative, but clearly, it is a positive, and particularly when they're struggling with debt these days. I mean, governments do need more taxes, and that's a pretty simple way to get it. The other is that, with a digital currency, you essentially, for the consumer in society, you can swap bank deposits for a deposit with the central bank. So,
explain that to me. So, does that mean like me, Dave McWilliams, has a Bank of Ireland account that I opened when I was 18 when I went to college? I think they bought me about 10 pints. I think that was the incentive. I remember the time Bank of Ireland, they were giving something away for free to get students. Yeah. And it's very interesting. Although you talk about bank competition over the years, we're going back 30 years, bank deposits are what they call in economics very sticky. People actually don't change that much. You get your bank deposit, you open your account, you get a credit card, la la la. And suddenly you find you're a bank customer for years, even though in your gut you think I should change, but they're sticky, right? Now, what we're talking about in this new world is no longer does David McWilliams have a Bank of Ireland or an AIB or whatever account, right? I have an account with the Irish Central Bank. Is that what we're talking about?
That's what you're talking about, Dave. And that's a transformation, because now you have a guarantee from the central bank as opposed to the bank.
Yeah.
And of course, the central bank is a state, which is a far better guarantee than the bank is.
But what does this mean for the bank? Because as we know, like obviously, a huge part, I mean, the banking business isn't that complicated. You take money in and you try to make sure that you don't give out as much interest on the money you take in as the money you lend out. And the margin in the middle should be your profit margin, more or less. If you're saying that deposits will be sucked out of our normal banks, given to the central bank, what does it mean for the banking system?
Yeah, well, let me just correct you there for a moment, Dave. Right? It should be a simple business, shouldn't it? But I mean, the banks have a habit of making it extremely complex by going bust every.
Well, that's true, and that's because of the difference between your deposits. I think it's a fair point to say that you've basically got what they call in economics a time mismatch, right? That your assets you can't actually call in because let's say they're a mortgage, so it's a 30-year thing, but your deposits can disappear overnight if people
can't.
That's
right. Yeah. And well, it's really, yeah, it's essentially, it's the credit risk.
Yeah, so tell me what happens to the bank now.
A bank run.
Yeah, tell mm-hmm. me, and bank runs we know through history are just, yeah. they are part of the cycle. What do you think will happen to banks in a digital currency era?
Well, again, I have to be careful with your audience, Dave, to pretend that I know the future. But I think I could paint a picture where banks, for the consumer, I think it is a huge positive. Because they can have deposits with central banks, yeah. Where the guarantee is better. Certainly, a country like Ireland.
Yeah.
I mean, you couldn't make the same statement in Uzbekistan, in Turkey, but, in Venezuela.
But in this part of the world, yeah.
But in the developed world, you can make that statement, right? And particularly within the Eurozone. I think there's a cleaner sense of a guarantee, and it's seamless, it's transparent, it's easier to deal with. I think for the banks, what it means is instead of getting the customer deposits off you, they get it off the central bank.
Okay.
Right? Because they have, obviously that's their source of funding.
So basically they'll borrow from the central bank.
Yeah, I think these banks will end up being lending institutions.
Okay, I hear you. Actually, would work quite nicely. It would also take out the risk.
Well.
It will take out the risk of the bank run in a much, yes, much more. Right, that's quite interesting. So we
and
could
a
go.
Bank could, a bank could then be let go bust easily, seamlessly, transparently, because you're just dealing with shareholder capital.
And its only obligation is to the central bank, which in,
yes,
itself can't go bust. Interesting.
Yes.
And do you think now, Rory, before we go, that we're on the cusp of this? Because what I'm always fascinated by money, even if you go all the way back, and we do it in the podcast, to the John gets bored of me talking about the Sumerians and the Egyptians and the Lydians and the original gold coming from
the stuff I actually like,
from the Pactolus River and all that carry on. This is something like, but the story of money is the story of financial innovation. At every stage, somebody figures out a better way of doing things, a quicker way of doing things, a more acceptable way of doing things. And usually this coincides with the technological change of some class. Do you think we're on the cusp of something like this now, Rory?
Yeah, but I'd like to make a distinction, Dave, if you'd allow me.
I will.
I'm a close follower of gold because I'm just very interested in it. And when I look at, the developments that are taking place, and particularly in the cryptocurrency world, my own understanding is that, true money serves two purposes. It serves the medium of exchange, and then it has to be a store of value. And, gold has always been a poor medium of exchange because the price, yeah, bounces around too much because of the lack of supply. But it's been a superb store of value because it's outside the banking system. Superb store of value relative to bank deposits, say, right, which aren't trusted. Equities and land are pretty good too. But when you look at cryptocurrencies, and I've thought about this deep and long, and I seem to still be in a minority on this, by the way, which is a little bit frustrating. I think cryptocurrencies are a medium of exchange, but a very poor one because of the price volatility.
Yeah.
But they are most definitely not a store of value. And the reason I say that is because if you go back to, is it Archimedes, the Greek philosopher, who defined the five principles of money as durable, consistent, convenient. What's the fourth? But anyway, the fifth is the one I'm after.
Universally accepted. Universally accepted.
Yeah, something like that.
Because it has, if it's not accepted, it's not money.
Yeah, absolutely. And the fifth, which is the most important in my mind in understanding this area, is it must have an alternative use value. Now, the reason that's important is because it goes back to what is an asset's intrinsic value. For gold, its intrinsic value is its alternative use value. If nobody wanted money, gold anymore for money, what would happen? The value of gold would go back to its production cost for jewelry.
Yeah, for jewelry and ornamentation and whatever.
Yes,
and you sell most of it in India, which is actually already the case.
Correct, and China. They're huge buyers as well.
Yeah.
And that is its intrinsic value. So if it's never required for money anymore, if the digital currencies work and nobody wants the money anymore and all the governments are always controlling the money supply and they do it well and they never wreck up and they blah, 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 then gold often goes through periods where it's ignored as money. Nobody wants it as money. From 1980 to 2000, gold corrected by, I think it was 76% from top to bottom. That's in price terms.
Yeah.
In inflation terms, I mean, it was nearly wiped out. Now it's had a huge recovery in the 2000s, but there was a 20-year period there where nobody wanted gold as money. They just didn't want it. Wasn't,
yeah,
needed. Everything was good. In the cryptocurrency world, anyone who invests in cryptocurrencies are going to have to answer that question. When they're no longer required as money, as will be inevitable from time to time, where is the intrinsic or base value? I would argue it's zero.
That's
not 1,000, not 2,000. It's zero. So all guys that are buying it, they're mixing up the medium of exchange with a store of value, in my view.
We will leave it there. The Bitcoiners are going to be going mental. But I think it's a very interesting place to leave it. Rory Gillen, thank you so much indeed. Excellent stuff.
All right.
That was Rory Gillen there of GillenMarkets.com. That's GillenMarkets.com. Very interesting newsletter every Saturday. Usually great insights, different angles, well worth a read. So check it out.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So John, fascinating stuff on money, but I'm going to tell you about Archimedes. Archimedes was part of the Greek colony in Syracuse, which is now in Sicily.
I know Syracuse very well, actually.
Do you know it? Have you been down there?
I've been there several times.
Have you? Because I've never been there. Right. Well, we're going to go. We'll do the podcast from there one day, right?
Ortega is the old part of Syracuse.
Oh, I like that.
It's really lovely.
Daniel Ortega. That's where the name of the Nicaraguan communist comes from.
Oh, right.
Well, I presume so. These are all things. But Archimedes is the fella who ran through the streets of Syracuse roaring, "Eureka, Eureka," right?
Oh, right.
And the reason he did was, you know, Archimedes' principle.
Yeah.
Which is basically, he was trying to figure out mass. Like, he was an incredibly brilliant person. And the reason I find this even more fascinating than talking about money is that he was a brilliant mathematician, right?
Right.
But he was trying to figure out mass. And he couldn't figure out how does it... And then he got into the bath, got into a full bath, and he realized that his weight displaced the same amount, right? And therefore, they could actually figure out how to cantilever things, how to use engineering, So it's really, really fascinating.
Really simple, but really brilliant.
And of course, because he was such an eccentric,
he
jumps out of the bath in the raw, goes down, runs through the street, and roars, "Eureka, Eureka." Now, the sad story about this, right, was that...
He was arrested.
He wasn't arrested. They thought he was mad. So the Greek Empire was a series of city-states, right?
Yeah.
Plato described them as like frogs looking into a pond. So the pond was the Mediterranean and the Aegean littoral, as they call it. And these little states, like Sicily and whatever, were kind of like frogs looking in. So they were all connected.
Right, that's a lovely image, actually.
Isn't it a great image? Oh, Plato was a good man for the imagery. Good man for the imagery. But one of the great tragedies of Western culture is the following, that Archimedes and the Greeks were beginning to get mathematics, right? They were really beginning to get mathematics, right? Having taken it from our friends, the Egyptians, who took it from our friends, the Persians and the Sumerians, right? So it was really, who took it from the Indians, right?
Right.
So it was all going on. And you know what happened? The Romans, who were this terrorizing macho force. So if the Greeks were sort of effete thinkers and philosophers, and the Romans were macho murderers, the Romans were a big militaristic force, and they started invading into Sicily, the old poor old Greek areas. Yeah. And didn't they kill Archimedes? They murdered him, right?
Right.
They murdered him as he was trying to figure out the mathematical equation on the ground, right? And that was the moment where the Romans came, destroyed all mathematics, and the Roman mathematics system has been unbelievably. Remember, like if you look at old, you couldn't count. You know the old Roman numerals, M, C, X, L.
You can't
count with that shit.
Yeah,
you can
it's
only.
True. Yeah.
Yeah, you can only. You only put it on posh houses. We always notice that people who are really aspirational use Roman numerals for their houses.
At the end of all TV programs.
But isn't that? Sorry, I find this fascinating.
No, keep going.
I'm just telling you, this is more of my stuff. But Syracuse we will go to, and we will do the podcast from there.
It's a fantastic spot.
And we will pay homage to Archimedes, and we will accuse the Romans not just of genocide, but of mathicide.
Mathicide.
Killing mathematics for an entire... And this, but John, I'm telling you, this is really true. What actually happened was, We got Roman mathematics, right? Mm. In the Dark Ages, right? The reason that we, in one of the main reasons the West went backwards in the Dark Ages is we couldn't count.
Yeah.
And the reason we couldn't count is we inherited this stupid system where the Greeks at the time were trying to work with the Indian system, which are the digits that we know,
yeah,
which changed the world. And as we know, they were eventually brought to the West by Syracuse, by Arab traders.
By the Arabs, yeah.
Who settled in the...
As you said, they turned up with nothing.
They zero. Did. That's what the Indians said. The Indians gave the world nothing and gave the world everything.
That's another story, Mac.
Archimedes. We go back to Archimedes.
That's another story. So actually, let's get back to the serious point that Rory was making there. What I can't quite get my head around is, why is this allowed to happen? You're talking about the people's money for a start.
We are talking about the people's
and
money.
And the kind of money that could fund the children's hospital or
whatever, yeah. Schools or, you know, a railway.
It's a huge amount of money.
Well,
so why is this happening now?
We're talking that if he's right and his numbers look right in terms of how to value a bank from its basic idea, the state is selling this asset for half of what it's potentially worth.
Yeah.
Right? So while we might get in 600 million from the sale, it means we've left maybe the guts of 600 million on the table. So yeah. That means that the buyer is getting a free lunch. The seller, of course, is the Irish state, but the Irish state passes through to the Irish taxpayer. So we are funding this. So the question then is, why now?
Yeah.
The state doesn't need money because we are in this new world of zero interest rates. So the ECB has said, listen, guys, the spigots are open. Do what you want. We'll figure out the cost later on.
Yeah, yeah.
Bank of Ireland as a company, we know that the mortgage market in this country is going to come back, whether we like it or not, because people need houses. Mm. So the single biggest dynamo of bank lending is going to kick in again very, very soon. So therefore, the future of Bank of Ireland as an institution is probably pretty robust. Mm. It also makes money. It also has what they call tier one capital. It is covered, is raised enough money to cover potential losses. So right now, it seems what he's saying is, why would you decide to sell? And my theory is the following.
Go on.
We're back in the West. Lower.
Okay. Of course we are.
Tarkin's here. Mick, Tony, Jim.
Barry.
Barry and Dara.
Oh, Dara's in.
Dara's a
now.
New lad. He's in, right? Dara's a new lad, right?
Powers up. Round of points.
Round of points. Tarkin, go get the points there because Tarkin's quid's in because he's advising somebody.
Yeah.
Right? This is keep it in the family Irish nonsense.
Go
again,
on.
Again, we're back in the West, lower. Mm. Right? The nod, the wink. Whatever you say, say nothing. What's happening is Davies, which is an asset that stinks as a result of them being caught with their hand on the till, and not only being caught with the hand on the till, being caught by the person that they were robbing, not by the Irish state, who was meant to be overseen. It was the fellow they were robbing actually took them to court, right? Now, there's a massive incentive for the Davies management, who are the very people who were caught robbing, to sell this asset to something else, which is a parachute for them to get out of the business.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And head down to wherever they head down to. So they are accelerating. Now, why would they be accelerating? Because they don't really want to be in a business. They want to retire.
Of course, yeah.
But they're being investigated by the Irish state, according to the Irish state.
Yeah.
Although we're not too sure how that investigation is going. There's always been the great expression that banks go bad from the inside out.
Yes. Right? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That is, the culture destroys them. And stockbrokers go bad from the inside out. Now, if the people who are at the top of the stockbroker are actively encouraging deceit when it comes to their clients, think about the culture. It permeates down from the top. This wasn't,
of course.
They didn't catch a couple of little traders having a scam. It was the chief executive.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it was the top brass.
So
therefore, the Irish state doesn't want to be owning Bank of Ireland when Bank of Ireland takes over Davies. Because when Bank of Ireland takes over Davies, the story goes away. And the people in the West Lower are really happy. And they've all been paid off.
Yes.
And of course, the problem is the state is prepared to sell Bank of Ireland cheaply, maybe in order for them to be able to buy Davies. And if that's not the golden circle doing its thing, I'm not too sure what is.
So okay, I get that. And it just feels and sounds rotten to the core of this. So the government wants to distance themselves from
Bank of Ireland.
From Bank of Ireland if and when they take over Davies.
To facilitate or at least clear the path.
Yeah, because they don't have anything to do with Davies, yeah. the company that they're investigating.
You can imagine the headline in the paper.
Yeah, but on the flip side of it, why are they allowing Bank of Ireland to take over Davies?
That is, I was about to say $64,000 question, but it's worth a lot more than that. That was a lot of money in those days, but not now. That's the open question, you know? Who is orchestrating the whole thing?
Yeah.
Because you'd imagine.
And is there, by the way, is there any competition to Bank of Ireland for buying Davies?
Let's go back to the West Lower. The West Lower doesn't want competition. They don't want foreigners coming in. Might look in weird, dark corners and say, I'm not too sure about that. They might say, well, let's hold up that sale until we really know what happened with all the shenanigans. You don't want foreigners, John. John, but this is a local lad's gig.
Do Europe not have a say in this?
Europe don't care. They're looking the other way. They're Europeans. I mean, I'm just saying, what we always point, you know what's really funny in Ireland?
Yeah.
Is we always say, surely the big fellas in Europe.
Yeah, yeah.
We've got to sort our own house out.
Yeah, yeah. Like there is no higher authority.
There is, exactly. It is us. You are judged by your own behaviour. And I think if you want to get to the bottom of this, Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil should take little note. They lost by-election last week.
Yeah.
They lost by-election. Fianna Fáil's vote collapsed, right? And the background noise was, whether it was right or not, was jobs for the boys, part of the establishment, the golden circle, propagating themselves. If they really want to change their brands and fight an election in 2 years' time,
yeah,
they've got to come clean or at least analyse what's going on here.
They need to drain the swamp.
John, I know you'd come back to him. I know you're missing him. I know you're missing him. He's not gone. He's not forgotten. He will be back. And the problem is, if we drain the swamp,
yeah,
what replaces it? Just a quick note to say thank you to all our Patreon supporters. And if you fancy supporting us on Patreon, you can check us out at patreon.com/David McWilliams.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.